I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson, today with our friend and political consultant, I guess we're going to call you today, Ann Dent. How are you doing, Ann Dent?
I'm so good.
Excellent.
Thanks.
Excellent. So we're talking politics, not like that's new. However, our state legislature began this week.
Mm-hmm.
And as usual, there's always, I always feel like this is a thing. You know, you start out with this big buffet. And then they wait till the last 2 weeks, and then they whittle it down to these things that they're actually going to pay attention to. So, Ann.
But it started a little different this year, though, Ann. Tell us about this year.
We absolutely started off with a punch this week with things, you know, because there is this rhyme and reason usually to how session goes. Things go through this rules committee. That's how bills even hit the floor. And our amazing supermajority decided to skip that process with this mass mandate. And they have decided just to go straight past public hearing and committees and to go to the Senate, straight to the Senate.
So public won't even get to say anything about any of these pieces of legislation?
Just this, they are trying to overturn, well, they have in the Senate.
Yeah, I was going to say, we need to back up and say, so there's a mask mandate that the Health Department issued in Salt Lake County and in Summit counties. And the state legislature in special session, actually, made it more difficult for local governing bodies to impose a mask mandate, made it easier for local. So if the health department issues a mask mandate, which is what happened in Salt Lake County, county council can overturn that, which in Salt Lake County they chose not to, also Summit County. So now the legislature opens it, and the very first thing they address is the Senate saying, we want to overturn this, and it passed pretty much along party lines, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it went to the House, where it has not I don't think it has hit the floor. It has not been.
So it's in the majority House caucus is negotiating with the governor right now on what that looks like. So it might hit the House floor today. I just heard Representative Periucci, who has picked up the bill, say that it might hit the House floor today. But, you know, we have a supermajority is a two-third majority.
Republican majority. Yeah,
we are a Republican majority. And so it will go on party lines. And so that means it will pass. And so we will not have a 30-day mask mandate if it passes, which it looks like this is what's going to happen.
Well, see, I'm holding out hope.
Is that 10,000 people a day are getting COVID.
Yeah, our numbers are up. So the Omicron, this mandate only goes through February 7th. I think both mandates end February 7th. Mm-hmm. And the governor has already exempted state buildings from the mask mandates. So
because the session.
Yeah. But I think part of the negotiation is it worth the political blowback? And not from us, the public. They don't really care what we think. Obviously, they didn't have any public hearings. These are municipalities, very powerful, well-funded municipalities that they need to deal with, right? Is it worth the political cost to pass to overturn the mandate when you're like 2 weeks from it overturning on its own? And also Omicron surge is expected to wane about that time, which is why they imposed the mask mandate when they did. I should also mention, because there's been a bunch of discussion about whether or not it's done any good looking at Salt Lake County numbers versus other counties. And I would say this, it's so complicated, the surge numbers. It's tourism. Why did Summit County get hit first? Not because they did anything wrong, because they have tourism, people coming from outside the state, same as Salt Lake City. And also you have a higher unsheltered population. You have more higher density housing. You have people living in multi-generational. You have more frontline workers in these communities. And then also the quality of mask matters. And I, my guess is that there are a lot of people living in my neighborhood, which I know for a fact, don't have access to an N95, which is what has been recommended with Omicron. So there are a number of factors. It's not just wearing masks. And I would say also when you have the government leading, undermining, I mean, the Salt Lake County Council had a very rigorous debate, which did not, which you saw two Republicans actually support leaving the mandate in place. And mostly they left it in place because there isn't any plan. What is the plan to mitigate spread, right? What is the plan to keep people safe? And really, it's about the hospitals. We have over 700 people hospitalized in the state right now. It's the highest numbers in the entire pandemic. And you're burning out your healthcare workers.
And many of them are getting sick in addition to being burned out. You know, it's we're not helping ourselves by doing this. However, again, people are selfish in a way that is even against their own self-interest. This is what I don't get. You know, if even if you just think masks are stupid, whatever, for reasons that are not logical, obviously, you're making your lives harder. If you have to go to the doctor, you got a longer wait now. If you have to go to the hospital, good luck getting in. If you had a real circumstance that you that was an emergent condition, we have only figured out a way. We don't have enough people working in the places we go to, whether they're restaurants, retail, any kind of professional office, because people are just getting sick at such a rate when they could help themselves. Oh, and don't even get me started with the people who are not vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this evidence, and again, this is the part that bothers me the most. They're not thinking with any logic whatsoever. This is all just emotional, irrational thought. But that is leading the debate. And certainly with Stuart Adams, who not only—
Which we need to say is the Senate president.
Is the Senate president who is a liar and disingenuous. He lied.
So let's talk about that.
He absolutely lied.
I think you need to say what happened.
He tested positive for COVID—
Twice.
—the week before session started. So Wednesday it was announced that he tested positive. That same day he went to a tax event that was held for legislators maskless, and then announced that his 5 days would end the day session started. So he shows up for session. They tested all the legislators, and they announced that he tested negative twice, and then when the heat was on him.
Actually, Salt Lake Tribune requested the records, and then it was revealed that he actually tested positive that day.
But the Senate never said he— they still said it was a mixed— they said it was a mix— that was their statement. It was a mixed result.
Yeah, because one was positive, one was inconclusive. And then he said he got a negative test. I don't know who's seen it. I don't know. But you can keep testing. It's like, you know, I've known people who've done this with a pregnancy test. You can take 8 tests. It doesn't change the result, right? And I think the bigger issue is when you say 5 days, 5 days is what the CDC changed to with Omicron in order to keep our society functioning. If you're vaccinated, then you can isolate 5 days, and then you wear a mask for 5 days after that. He didn't ever do any of that.
Well, and he is also—
that he isolated.
He is also— I really want to point out, so he is leading, you know, the Senate president leads the Senate floor. He's the leader. So they were in session all day. There was a senator that brought his baby there all day. There is Senator Iemoto, who stated she is quarantining from her 92-year-old mother. So there are people in this room that you want to protect. And I guess this is what you said, Jason, and I don't understand in this great state of us being this Christian-led state of helping others and watching out for others, since when did we become so selfish that wearing a mask and watching—
No, but let me just play devil's advocate, because we don't have anybody here who believes this. But I was told we don't believe the masks work, so why would we wear them? And my feeling is this: the healthcare professionals are telling you that they work if you have the right ones. So why not focus all this energy we're having on fighting about it on getting everyone a decent mask? so that that we can just do the minimum, because we're not going to convince people to take shots. They're fighting the federal government on that mandate. So my feeling is we're spending all this time fighting about you telling me what to do or you making me what to do. If we just listen to the healthcare professionals, if we just listen, every public health official is in agreement on this about what to do. And we can't follow their advice because we're too busy worrying, making it political.
So I don't
but
know. I listen.
I mean, we got to stop saying that. I mean, it is political. And it is going to be political. We have to own that.
Because we made it
that
way.
And so the fact that it is continuing that way, that doesn't change. You got one last comment.
So this is – I listened to Representative Pierucci this morning, and she said that there is a study done.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
And I can't think of the town now, but it's been going on since September. They have had a mask mandate. They're the only town that has one, and the outskirting towns do not. And there is no difference from the town that has a mask mandate. And so they are finding these studies, and they are finding, you know, health professionals. That's why this has been so hard.
They are not finding a public health professional who says you shouldn't mask up in an N95.
No,
I would
but
like
they,
to know what
they
mask
are,
those people wore.
Right. They're okay. Finding – this is why it's so hard is
yeah.
Because they are finding
–
I'm putting
–
professionals in asterisks, yeah. Right?
Because they want to just do whatever they want to do despite what they're supposed to be doing.
Yes.
When we come back, we're actually going to get to some of the other politics that we should be talking about. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson, back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason, joined today by political consultant and our friend, Ann Dent. And we just had the State of the State.
Yeah, last
Governor,
night.
Spencer Cox. And Ann wants to get to something that's very important, too, but we just want to kind of lay a framework
here. The reason I thought maybe to discuss the State of the State is because I think it's supposed to set the tone for the way the legislature will operate, right? It's not just where we're at, it's what we're going to be doing on. And I thought Governor Cox, there were a lot of things in it that are good, and I love the idea of it. I'm having trouble. I'm like the person who's been lied to because I think we saw that with the redistricting that the comments were overwhelmingly against what the legislature did, and they chose to ignore that. And so I'm listening to this, let's be an example of working together and helping each other and taking care of the most vulnerable. But the actions of the recent past have not supported that. So I struggled with that, but I thought a lot of things that he said were good, and I hope that they come true. And I hope that this idea of working together isn't just working together, the supermajority working together to do what they want in spite of what the public or anybody else wants, that they'll look at people who are in the minority party and say, you have good ideas too, or that's a good suggestion and that will make my idea better. And I don't know. I listened to somebody the other day who said the biggest issue we have is that we just don't talk to each other anymore. And it was a guy, a playwright. But I thought that is so – it's just so much about political wins, and I just don't know – I thought the tone of the speech was amazing and lovely, and I hope and pray it is the tone of this session. But you're watching more than I am, and I had to take a break after the COVID mask mandate discussion.
This is so interesting because you're usually the jaded, like, this sucks, and I'm usually the, it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And I listened to it, and I just thought, this is like every state of the state. Utah is amazing, and we work together, and we listen to each other. And I'm like, can you give me examples of that? Because in no way in the last couple of years do I feel anybody is really working
I can give you an
with
example.
Each other.
I can give you an example. Criminal justice reform and the effort to repeal the death penalty. There's a bill that is likely going to come to vote, and I think it will pass. And that is and right now, only 51% of Utahns support the death penalty. So it's
which is a majority,
but by 1%, and it's the best scenario that it's ever been for getting rid of the death penalty. It used to be just like 10 or 12 years ago, 75% of people supported the death penalty. So, and there's a lot of reasons people don't support it that don't have anything to do with reverence for life. It has to do with how much it costs and the system, and you don't see rich people who have money for a private attorney on death row. There's a lot, and I think the Innocence Project. But you saw Brian Stevenson came. Visited Utah and talked about it. So I think that's the criminal justice reform and what's happening there is an example of when they listen to each other across party lines.
I think that's like a little fraction of criminal justice reform. Let's just
important though.
Absolutely yeah. important. Yeah. But let's talk about things that
and, you just said and an that, example.
And that right. is an example. But I'm just talking about in the last couple of years, like we have our elected officials can't get along. We are not working together to help each other. We are more divided as a state, I think, than we have ever been. And so I feel like these talks from our governors, because I don't feel like this state of the state was any different than a Herbert talk. Honestly,
Herbert was a prior governor.
They're the same tone, and I feel like it's almost gaslighting us. We are working together, but guess what? I'm the governor, but this legislation, legislators don't listen to me. Like I have to go in and negotiate with them and kind of like lose my skin. It's really almost comedic at this point. Nobody really is listening to each other. And the big issues, affordable housing, homelessness, we're not.
Healthcare. Education.
You know, racial equity.
So what did you think of the announcement of the task force on, I'll have to look up the actual
name. Did you see the makeup of that task force?
Task force on what? I'm sorry. We have to kind of.
Yeah. Give us the DL.
So it is a, well, what is the, is it the technical name is the racial equity task, not racial equity, Amy, you look it up. But
yeah, I'll look it up. You can.
They put together, they made this big announcement on the Hill and it was, you know, in front of the press and with our legislators, our majority leader, Mike Schultz, and some other, you know, they had the Quad Caucus, which is the caucus that is our BIPOC legislators, mm-hmm. Who are Democrats. They are going to be a part of this group as well.
Oh, and got it.
Go ahead.
It's the their group. The task force is to develop K-12 curriculum on diversity and inclusion. So there's competing. I should mention, though, there are competing efforts to either make what we teach kids smaller and more white or make it more inclusive and larger. And I was really shocked. I watched this press conference on social media. I think it was on YouTube or Facebook Live or something. But Sandra Hollins was there. I'm trying to remember.
Senator
Sandra
Hollins, the only black person in the Utah State Senate.
Yeah. Was it Luz? Is Luz Escamilla on the and Mike
Senator?
I did not expect Mike Schultz to be involved. Candace Perucci was there. I was shocked by that coalition. I was like, just those four people. I'm like, wow. Well, I'd love to have a conversation with the four of them.
Well, we already know where they stand. They are anti-CRT. They are so like.
Well, some of them are. Senator Hollins is not anti-CRT.
Yeah, but I'm just going to be very frank. Yeah. Like, they put Senator Hollins, like, she passes resolutions or tries, and, you know, it doesn't get us anywhere.
Well,
like,
who's Escamilla?
She knows Martin Luther King Day. I'm not saying she don't. It doesn't all work.
Their voices,
somebody's gotta have a voice.
Their voices stand out, but they don't make any headway because this supermajority pushes back. Yeah. So we can put together these coalitions that look great.
Well, I want to watch this.
Juneteenth Day. I'm sorry.
If nothing happens with these coalitions, and if they don't listen to these individuals that are the Sandra Hollins. I want to call Representative Hollins, Senator Escamilla. If they don't actually listen to them, it's just a show.
And so I think what Jason has said repeatedly, and I think is really true, is it's really hard to hate up close. And I think that they're, Senator or Representative Schultz and Perucci are going to get an education just being in the room and having these conversations. Mm-hmm. My guess is they don't have much, you know, social contact with people outside of their own universe. And so I think there could be something good come. I'm interested to watch it because at the time when you have these really uninformed or misinformed groups saying we have to stop teaching CRT, which we're not doing in elementary schools, and basically they just want no mention of any person of color doing anything interesting or good. That's really what we're talking about. And misrepresenting a lot of aspects of our history. That's what they're talking about doing. Well, in the same time they're doing that and talking about banning books, this has formed. I was really shocked. And I listened to the press conference and I was like, well, I'm not buying what they're selling yet, but I am interested. I would like to hear those conversations. I've seen these task force form before. And I've seen the people of color get frustrated and disillusioned and basically give up and not participate or not endorse what comes out of it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. And I just thought, especially Mike Schultz being in there with Luz Escamilla, I think that would be an interesting
dynamic. It's a start.
Mike Schultz, our majority leader, who was COVID positive about a month ago and said, I'm not afraid of it, and I've been trying to get it for a very long time.
But also, he did support sort of this election integrity issue. Like, he was, you know, he wanted to audit. He wanted to support auditing our elections, which thankfully that got squashed. And I did think Spencer Cox basically saying it's a big lie to say the elections were stolen. And I thought coming out really strongly on that was important.
Thank you,
because
Governor.
There are people.
He was in charge of the election. He knew.
Absolutely. And I think Utah has been a leader on like how to involve people, you know, get vote by mail.
I mean, if you get me started with vote by mail has made everybody's life better. But yet there are places around this country that are trying to squash that to make it more difficult for people to vote. We got to end this segment. When we come back, we're going to talk about that budget surplus that Ann wants to talk about. Tax cuts, really? Some things about legislation and just governments just are head scratchers that just really annoy the crap out of me. But, you know, we still have to have constructive discussions about it. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson, back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason, here today with political consultant Ann Dent. So, Ann, because we're such a well-managed state, which every governor has ever said in a State of the State address or anything else, whenever there's a microphone involved, we are at a point where our legislators, because they are Republican, they think the answer to everything is cutting taxes, which to me always makes no sense because how do you pay for things? You know, How does that happen without revenue? We have a surplus, and we've had one for many, many years. I mean, this has been going along. I've been here since 2001, and we've had a surplus almost every year of all that time. But I know one of the things that the legislature is considering is yet another tax cut. I throw the ball in your court. What are we looking at, and what are the kinds of programs that would potentially be impacted by this?
So this year we're looking at a $1.2 billion surplus. And what's so interesting and fascinating for me to follow is the different ways the two, you know, parties or the R's and the D's want to deal with this surplus and tax cuts. Ours definitely, the Republicans, which is our majority, want to do a sweeping tax cut. And that would, you know, everybody would be affected by like $2 or $3. And the Democrats, they want to look at programs and they want to, you know, the big thing they are pushing this year for this session is they want to cut our food tax. Huge push for that, which would really, really help, you know, marginalized, impoverished families. It would help all of us, you know.
And but particularly them. I mean, like, I don't necessarily need to help as much as somebody who's really on the brink of they're either in poverty or right there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because, you know, as you think about it, when we're spending money on groceries, even an extra $10, $20 a month a savings on groceries is that's huge. That's like going to work. Like we think about these amounts and some people are like, that's not, I've heard Republican legislators say, oh, that's only an extra $20 a month. And then I say, that's huge in some people's lives.
That's a bill to somebody.
That's huge. Right. So I think that what we're looking at here is the same historical thing of like Democrats pushing for let's help people that need it. And Republicans are trying to cut from people that don't need the help. They're flourishing and we're trying to help them as well.
Yeah. I mean, I have mixed feelings about tax cuts. I need to see like eventually like where the rubber meets the road. Like what are you paying for? How much does it cost? And what are you talking about giving us back? Because I do think that there should be some tax cut. I think it should be weighted to the bottom half of us versus because the Trump tax cuts were definitely weighted towards the more wealthy people. I think doing some kind of state child tax credit would be a better idea. I think a daycare assistance, you know, the pre-K, those would be better uses, in my opinion, of a surplus. But people, they have mixed feelings about how much of that is the government's responsibility and how much of that is an individual's responsibility. And I would just say with an influx of in our refugee communities and with everybody taking an economic hit because of the pandemic, like let's create more of a safety net than we normally would think we would use and then see how things go. I just think don't think of this like you always do because the situation we are in right now is unique and different. And I think this idea.
Explain what you mean by that.
Because I think it's not just a matter of like, oh, we have this extra money. Should we make more programs or whatever? I think the world has been upended in the last 2 years in a lot of ways. I mean, I just read that 50 babies were hospitalized with COVID in the last 2 weeks in Utah. The amount of medical debt that's being incurred alone is going to bankrupt most of these families. I just think creating more of a social safety net than Utahns are normally willing to create because of the pandemic is what our legislature should do. I think what they'll do is it's easy to say, I'm going to give you a tax cut and then I can talk about that as a success. It's much, much more difficult to say we got rid of cash bail. We reformed training for police officers. We raised the standard for police reviews. These are harder things to say this was a success. But that's really what governing is. And that's really what we want is, you know, the world has not been normal for 2 years. So we're going to think outside the box and look at, you know, do we need to create some cell towers in more rural communities? You know, that's what I know down on the Navajo Nation, the healthcare, Utah Navajo Health Systems applied for grant money from the federal government, got it and built cell towers so that people could do telehealth. That's just one of the ways in which you just have to think differently about this time that we're in. So normally I'm like, let's just have the tax cut because debating what we are or are not going to pay for just makes me feel terrible as a human being. I wish and hope that they would think a little bit more like, okay, we're not normally down with this, but let's think about doing it. We have this extra money. A lot of this surplus is because of the CARES Act, Part 1 and Part 2. So let's see if we can pass that that benefit on to us as a society. Maybe you are not going to have 20 extra bucks to spend, but your neighborhood will be safer. I mean, we just had 3 kids get shot in, right, you know, near my neighborhood. Maybe we need to do more and do something different so that this kind of stuff isn't happening.
I mean, I think that, like, if you watch Session, like, if you really watch like, it like
yeah.
me,
yeah.
You see bills like this, you know, put forth, and they get shot down. So I think that the reason the Democrats are really pushing this food tax is because it is sweeping and it is something that will affect a large group. And we always try to push forth, you know, firearm bills and different bills that, like, you are suggesting, and they always get, they don't even get out of rules committee, let alone get to the floors. So this is a bill that could affect so many people, and I think in a perfect world or a perfect legislature, we should pass what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's
realistic.
So
what's your best guess? My best guess is we're getting a tax cut and the food bill passes. The food tax repeal will pass because it is a tax cut. First and foremost, it's a tax cut for everybody. And they can point to that. But it's it feels like a concession to the Republicans to say, oh, we gave you this. Don't ask us for anything else.
Well, I mean, that, if anybody knows, that's how this works, right? I'll give you this, and then you guys kind of act like we
did
something.
That's the political way.
We did something for
you.
We did a social
program for you.
We gave you what you wanted.
Also a tax cut.
We help those people.
We're feeding your poor.
That's right.
Right? That's not us.
We're caring for the poor.
They're not our poor. They're your poor.
Yes. That's why I said that, right? Because there is a percentage of people that have actually made money through the pandemic. I actually just read a tweet on the way here. I was stopped at a stoplight, and it said, the man said, I loved Governor Cox's speech. Our Utah has thrived from the pandemic. My kids are still in school, and this state is just doing so great. And I thought, where do you live and who are you?
Well, here's the thing, though. I mean, there's always haves and have-nots,
right? Absolutely.
I've been fortunate. I've never missed a paycheck during all of this. Well, that makes me really lucky because there's plenty of people who haven't had that circumstance. So that guy, though, unfortunately, probably doesn't recognize his good fortune. He thinks that's just prevalent among the masses, when in actuality, we know that that's not true. If you live in your bubble, you can make it seem like the world is a great place. And the reason I don't ever do that is because I have seen abject poverty, and we described it a little bit earlier, you know, just having grown up, my mom was from rural Mississippi. I grew up in Chicago, where I've seen this enormous disparity in wealth growing up all my life, and it's only gotten worse. Well, those people who are on the bottom end of the social and economic ladder, their lives are tenuous every day. Not sometimes. They don't have downtime. Their lives are trying to, you know, keep their noses above the water. And we don't think enough about them. We think of just our own little circle. And if that's going well, then the world's going well. But if something bad has happened to me, somebody in my family gets sick or I got cancer or something, then the world sucks. We have to, at some point, think of our society as a whole, and including those who are the least among us in terms of their economic resource and their ability to help themselves. That's when we reach down and help them, because we have the ability and we have the resources to do it, and it won't impact our lives in any significant way. When we come back, we will finish this thing up. There's so much politics to talk about, but
I'd love to talk to some of the law enforcement bills if we want to get to that.
We can absolutely do that. You're listening to Voices of Reason.
Whatever.
We are back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason, Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson. And today, speaking with political consultant Ann Dent, our state legislature has just begun. And like so many states around the country, because this is how January begins, when each legislature starts talking about the kinds of ways they can hopefully help their state. That may be different in some places, because we have a supermajority. The Republicans rule everything, and they decide what happens, and we kind of have to live with it. Sometimes it's okay. Sometimes they miss the mark, in my opinion. All right. So we've just started this, and What should we look for, and how this process will kind of evolve? Because this is a 6-week process. It's a 6-week legislature.
Absolutely. I think this. So the first week in session, we talk about, they are looking at the budget, and it's a lot of budget talks and bills that are up. They first go to a rules committee, and this rules committee will decide what even gets out of this rules committee that goes to the different committees that have public hearings. And so those...
Oh, so the public will get heard at some point.
Absolutely. Except for the ones that bypass that, like we saw with the mask mandate. Now, that is not very common. So this week, what you'll hear on the House floor and the Senate floor is pushing it to the Rules Committee. And so I'm excited to come back in each week and talk about different bills that the House and the Senate will debate. Each committee is comprised of legislators that are appointed. And so, you know, the Executive Appropriations Committee, that is like the grand poobah of committees. They decide where all the money goes. To get on that committee, you have to be someone of someone. But each committee is comprised of different legislators. You know, a really good tool is le.utah.gov. If you go to that website, you can look at each legislator, what committees they're on. There's also a calendar. The calendar will tell you what's in session, and you can watch it live as well. It's really a great tool.
And I suggest, if you're on social media, like following your representatives and maybe leadership, because then you'll kind of know, oh, we're debating this today, or I'm bringing this issue to the floor, or I'm going to have this meeting, or there's a chance for the public to comment on X. Those are all good ways to kind of keep track of things, because they have done a better job of like Facebook Live, and you can listen remotely on most of these things. And I think it's made the legislative process more accessible to more people. It's just a lot of people do not know that it's available to them. So,
and it's all public. So, yeah. I mean, we do have a pandemic surging, but if you want to be brave and wear a mask, you are absolutely, masks aren't, you don't have to wear
a mask. You don't have to, but
actually,
you should.
But I'm encouraging you to wear a mask. But you can attend a committee, you can attend Senate or House floor time. And I encourage everybody to do that. It's really, for me, it's fun. But it's really interesting to see how it all works. And
you have to see how the sausage is made?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
What does democracy look like up close and personal?
And the Capitol is such a fascinating place. So I encourage everybody to at least go up once and, like, take part. And even you can take part in public hearings. There are so many
ways. Well,
just
listen to the public hearings.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's a lot of – you'd be surprised the information you get hearing people – because there are folks who are, like, into this, right? So they go all the time.
Yeah.
I've been to a few public hearings, I mean, mostly as a reporter. But I just remember thinking – these are people who, either city councils or legislators, they know their names because these people have made a mark. They are serious about their civic duty. And to me, that's kind of the wonderful greatness of democracy, having the opportunity to be a part of it if you so choose.
But I want more people to be like that, not obsessed like me, but I would like everybody in the grocery store to know who their city council representative is and who their school board person
Well, and I will say,
you
can look up really easily at that website that you gave out, and you can look up your own or just Google your own representative based on your address, and then you can meet them. And I will say that once you meet somebody and say, hey, you're my representative – then when you send an email because they're talking about banning books at your kid's school, it gets their attention in a way that it won't if it's just a random – if they know you live there and you might vote for them. It's different than just a random person sounding off about an issue. So I just encourage you to get to know people in that way and then to thank them for the good things they do too, because certainly criticizing them for the bad things or the things we disagree with – there's a lot of really interesting things that are going to be debated, a lot of law enforcement related bills that are going to come up, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about those in the coming weeks as
come
through committee. But you're talking about there's a lot of criminal justice reform But one thing I would say pay attention to is how is the money being spent? Where is the surplus going? And then you can decide, would you rather have a tax cut or would you rather have them spend it on a bullet train to St. George, which is one of the things I heard proposed, which everyone says, but that's not a bad idea. I don't.
It's not at all.
You know,
it's
there's
not at all.
There's a lot. Of,
it would
just
say, cost way too much money.
I would say there that you need to improve public transportation, especially on the west side of the valley, east to
I would
west
say,
traffic.
The entire valley.
Yeah.
You know, I come from Chicago, right? When I grew up, you didn't have to own a car.
Yeah.
And you could just take the bus. There are so many people. The bus does not come to my house. I still find that crazy. What I think could happen if the legislature and civic leaders, they should make it so that all the major streets have a bus line. And I don't mean that come every 30 minutes. I'm talking about every 10 minutes. If you did that, you could change the atmosphere in the valley. We would get rid of a lot of smog because you could use electric or natural gas. Well, we usually want to use electric buses, which they have plenty of. Make the system more robust so that people have a motivation to use it because it allows them to get to where they need to go at a costly fashion, in a affordable fashion, and then be able to use it day and night and on the weekends. But they don't do it. And
how
then
do
they
we make that
don't
important
it.
For – so we have to make that important for our legislators, right? And most of them don't find it important for themselves.
Because they have cars.
Well, but I think there is an issue of air quality right now. There is an issue of what are we going to do about that? And these are ways. So there's more than one way into an issue. Instead of, maybe you don't care because you have a car and you're driving your car every day, but you might care if it means that your kid with asthma or your grandkid with asthma or your neighbor kid with asthma can't go outside and play because the air is so disgusting. I don't dare run in the valley right now. So I think there are a lot of ways, and I think listening to those people who come in to make comments, I always hear something I had not considered. Mm-hmm. They always come in and say, this is my situation, and I think, I didn't know that because that's not my experience. And I hope that the legislators, the people making these decisions, will consider more than just their own personal framework, belief system, and experience, because that's the key, I think, to everyone feeling like they have a piece of this democracy.
I feel like what we need to do is just, again, be more empathetic to those not outside of your circle and outside of your universe, as Amy likes to say. You know, that's how you can help the masses, by not thinking of how it's going to help necessarily your neighbor, but your neighbors, far-reaching in the communities we live in. We, you know, you live in a state, you live in a county, you live in a city. All of this matters, and to all of those people, and as much as you can, if you can kind of visualize how can we, you know, as a society, help everybody in some way, maybe we get a little further along with this. And thank you. We will look forward to having you back soon.
Thank you.
Join us again for the next episode of the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. If you have any comments about the show, please contact us via email at voramed@gmail.com. or at VORJasonL@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at ADOnSports and at JasonLee1. Our show's Twitter handle is at VOR Podcast. Check out our Facebook page, and you can also find and subscribe to free episodes of our podcast any of the places where you find interesting podcasts. Also, be sure to review our show as well. We love to get your feedback, and of course, it helps us grow our audience. Until next time, I'm Jason Lee along with Amy Donaldson. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason.
Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.